Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, our final case for this morning is Nicholas Barrett against Andrew Saul, Commissioner of Social Security. And we have Mr. Forbes and Mr. Alicia. So, Mr. Forbes, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I represent the disability claimant in this case. I did not represent the claimant at the administrative level or at the district court level. Essentially, Appellant views this case as one in which the ALJ's analysis of the appellant's pain is the critical element. SSR 16-3P provides administrative guidance, but essentially the law says if pain's disabling, it can be disabled. It can be the basis of disability, but if there's objective medical evidence that provides a basis for the pain, then that is provides for even more credibility. Here, what is most troubling is that the main pain generator was problems with the tibia-talar joint, which is the most important ankle joint. It's where the weight bearing starts. It's the big bone of the foot and the first big ankle bone, and there were some real problems with that were brought up by imaging studies. And I know that I'm parsing words words with the ALJ here, but they are really important words because they describe the degree of damage. And the ALJ leaves out of the discussion the fact that it was marked degenerative change of the tibio-talar joint with soft tissue edema present. And later on the other imaging, the ALJ leaves out the word significant. Now, those are like, from the appellant's point of view and assessing the appellant's pain, like the most important words in the whole record, it seems. And leaving those words out in the decision almost looks like the judicial process or the administrative judicial process was done backwards. In other words, the evidence was cherry-picked and then formulated in order to support the conclusion rather than let the conclusion arise from the evidence.
Could I just suggest maybe another way of looking at this? And I want you to tell me whether that's valid and also what we're to make of it. Because reading through the ALJ's opinion, there are various comments. I mean, I think the ALJ believes that Mr. Barrett is in pain from his foot, but there's a degree question. And is this so much pain that he can't actually sustain regular work or not, and is he exaggerating somehow? And there are a lot of questions of judgment in there. So the ALJ is looking at things like, you know, his failure to seek out specialist care. They mentioned at one point the kind of pain medications he's taking. The ALJ sees this as something where maybe his subjective complaints don't have enough of a grounding in objective medical evidence. Now, certainly there's objective evidence. There's this whole reconstruction of the foot that had to happen. but there's kind of evidence all over the block, and the ALJ distills from it a finding that he can actually still function. That sounds like a question of judgment to me, and the kind of thing maybe we defer to the ALJ on.
If the ALJ had identified the or put into the opinion the words marked and significant in the analysis of the most important imaging in the whole case, and then conducted a fair explanation as to why the ALJ reached the conclusion that was reached, then I would agree with you, Your Honor.
So you think the ALJ didn't grapple with the evidence as it was?
Yes, Your Honor. And the main point was when he's testifying about his pain and the fact that he has to sit in the recliner and elevate that foot, if the imaging is looked at from the view that that's correct, then the word significant and marked really means something. And so that's where we're at, Your Honor. Thank you very much. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Alicia. Yes, I heard that too. So Mr. Alicia, I decided that we would just reset the time for your argument because I'm sure everybody's lost their train of thought. So you may proceed from the beginning of your argument.
Thank you very much. I apologize. I'm still not sure what happened. May it please the court, Brian Alicia on behalf of the defendant appellee, the Commissioner of Social Security. The only narrow issue that Mr. Barrett raises on appeal is the ALJ's evaluation of his subjective allegations concerning left ankle pain. However, the ALJ cited substantial record evidence that is applied to the relevant regulatory factors for assessing Mr. Barrett's subjective complaints. ALJ explained how the objective medical evidence, Mr. Barrett's treatment history, his statements to medical providers regarding the effectiveness of his medication, and physician opinions and other factors did not support the degree to which Mr. Barrett stated his left ankle pain affected him. She acknowledged positive findings, but she also found that Mr. Barrett had largely unremarkable physical examinations. And she noted that in his most recent exams with his treating physician, Dr. Gindy, he showed no tenderness and normal range of motion in his left ankle. She considered Mr. Barrett's treatment history consisting of medication from Dr. Gindy, and she also considered the record medical opinions, including those from Dr. Belinsky and Dr. Bird.
So, Mr. Alicia, could I ask you, it seems to me at least theoretically possible that you could have a normal range of motion in a particular joint, and yet you might still experience pain when you are engaged in that motion. So how do those two link up?
Well, in physical exams, Mr. Barrett, in the most recent physical exams on the record, Mr. Barrett did not show tenderness in his left ankle.
So the doctors instead, you're saying the doctors were not writing down, you know, he could rotate his ankle, but he was wincing or he displayed signs of pain when doing so.
I believe that Dr. Gindy and his physician assistant, Mr. Olivier, noted that he had no tenderness, and that indicates to me no tenderness to the touch in his left ankle. And if he had normal range of motion, I would think that they would say normal range of motion but with pain, because they did talk about tenderness in earlier examinations, and they also talked about some mild swelling. But there were several exams where Mr. Barrett did not show tenderness and showed normal range of motion in his left ankle.
Does range of motion include weight-bearing? I mean, I can imagine sticking my foot out in the air and wiggling it around. That's one thing. But I could also imagine being asked, you know, to walk for 15 minutes, and that would perhaps be something different.
Well, in his consultative exam he was able to walk unassisted, although he did have an antalgic gait. He was able to walk unassisted, and the consulting physician, Dr. Chapa, stated that Mr. Barrett did not need an assistive device. And the ALJ
But he used an assistive device, right? Didn't he normally use a cane or sometimes a chair?
He testified to that, but any of the treatment notes concerning his physical impairments don't mention his use of an assistive device. And he didn't, there's no indication that he produced medical documentation showing the need for it and describing the circumstances under which would be needed, which would have been required under Social Security ruling 96-9P.
Okay.
And Mr. Barrett's narrow argument on appeal also primarily relies on his narrow focus concerning the imaging of his left ankle. He claims that the ALJ ignored an entire line of evidence when she did not specifically mention every finding in discussing the results of a left ankle x-ray and CT scan. And he concludes that because the ALJ didn't specifically mention every result in these images, it can be inferred that Barrett's actual residual functional capacity was far more restrictive than the ALJ found. But there are two problems with this. The ALJ considered the very images that Barrett claimed she overlooked, and Barrett's argument wrongly places the burden of production on the ALJ to disprove disability. And in Mr. Barrett's brief, he ignores that the ALJ analyzed every exam in the record and especially noted the more recent exams showing no tenderness and normal range of motion in his left ankle. Thus, the ALJ did not unfairly discuss the evidence from the record when she did not specifically mention every finding in the imaging studies. We also have Dr. Bird, state agency reviewing physician Dr. Bird, who provided her opinion when these images were in the record. And the ALJ found that Dr. Bird and Dr. Belinsky's opinions limiting Mr. Barrett to 2 hours standing were reasonable, and she assessed additional limitations from there. So there's no record physician indicating greater limitations than those imposed by the ALJ. Conversely, Mr. Barrett narrowly focuses on these images without mentioning the ALJ's evaluation of each physical exam on the record and the ALJ's evaluation of Dr. Bird's opinion, which included a review of the imaging that he speaks of. Finally, we would argue that Mr. Barrett has waived any arguments that he raised before the district court, but chose not to raise before this court, and he did not file a reply in this case. Unless there are any questions, the commissioner would respect the request that for these reasons and those set forth in our brief, we would request that the court affirm the decision.
All right, I see no questions, so thank you very much. Mr. Forbes, anything additional?
Appellant's not arguing that the judge didn't look at all the different areas of evidence. We are arguing that by leaving out what the judge left out, that says something really significant. When you leave out the word significant or marked, that's a big deal.
So you're saying she looked at it, but inaccurately somehow.
Right. Given the judge the benefit of the doubt, she dismissed the most important words in the two imaging things that we're looking at. Pain waxes and wanes. They catch him on a good day. He might have full range of motion, although I'm not quite sure how you can have full range of motion with the type of surgeries he had and the hardware that's in his feet. It could very well have been, although I don't know that this is in the record, but it could very well have been if they're twisting that ankle around in a full range of motion, they're injuring him. I guess the other point is that sometimes when we think about ankles, we just think, oh, it's just an ankle. You know, a lot of us have ankle sprains or subluxations, but when an ankle gets injured like the appellant's ankle gets injured, and it takes three surgeries to try to reconstruct it, and it involves putting in of hardware, things are never right. And so the final point is that this is a guy who worked at least enough to earn a credit every quarter since he was about 17 years old. Guys who work like that don't quit if there's any way they can get back into the workforce. And this guy, he couldn't get back there. So you've got that basis, that credibility basis, combined with the imaging that talks about how bad off this ankle joint is. And all of a sudden, his testimony that he has to sit and elevate this foot, that becomes quite meaningful. And the ALJ, despite all of the efforts that were put into this decision, I think left out, for whatever reason, the key evidence that would back up the appellant's testimony, and that certainly is good grounds for a remand. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks also to Mr. Alicia. The court will take this case under advisement, and we will be in recess.